This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio. Now to one example of the lengths families will go to pay for a child's college education, or in this case, the lengths they'll go to save money on that education. This is the story of the Maryland family who lived in a donut hole.
So we don't qualify for any need-based aid, as most middle-class families do not. We make too much money to qualify for need-based aid, and we don't make enough money to pay full tuition at most universities, particularly private universities. We are what's called a donut hole family.
So you're not like a tycoon with a yacht or anything?
No, we are a middle class family with four kids to send to college. And as you can do the math, budgeting out $100,000 for each kid. And we came up with that number because that's what it cost to go to our state schools, roughly $25,000 right now. By the time my fourth one gets in school, that will be more, actually, because, of course, tuition goes up every year, right? So for us, we figure to send four kids to our state university with that budget will cost us roughly $500,000. That's not a private university. $500,000 to educate our kids at a state university.
Wow. Ron, that's a challenge that many families find themselves in. I mean, that's like an almost an archetype, right?
Almost, right? I mean, this is the challenge, right? If you want to educate some number of children from ages 0 to 18 and, you know, cultivate them in such a way that they will be attractive candidates to get into flagship state universities, which are increasingly harder to get into as more people become more value conscious, you do have to spend a bunch of money along the way too. And you may have your own student loans to pay back. So how on earth a family could save, say, $500,000? It boggles the mind for most people who consider it.
So Laura, your eldest, she's a great student and she ended up with Ivy League style grades and sweet test scores. And so you embarked on this quest. Tell us about this. What, to find colleges where you felt you stood the chance, a decent chance of getting merit aid?
Yeah. So my daughter had a very, very high SAT score. She had a perfect math score. She attended an international baccalaureate magnet school, so very rigorous curriculum, and she had an almost perfect GPA, in addition to lots of leadership and volunteer work and all those things that those schools are looking for. And we got a lot of, why is she not applying to the Ivy Leagues? She could potentially get into Stanford. She could potentially get into Yale. But the truth is, for middle-class families, need-based schools are wonderful if you can afford your EFC, which is what the government says when you fill out your FAFSA, the expected family contribution. If you can afford that and you have a high stats kid, you should absolutely apply to those Ivy League schools. Our EFC from the government was 40% of our take-home pay. That was completely undoable, obviously, right? We can't afford to spend 40% of our take-home pay to send one child to school.
So you embark on this this project to figure out where could she go, where they would give her money.
Yep. So at that point, we started looking at and trying to figure out, okay, so she has these high stats. We can't go to Ivy. We can't afford that. So that's off the table, right? Where can she go with these high stats that will give us merit money? So I was fortunate. The paying for college page, I had a parent who sort of reached back to lend me a hand, if that makes sense. And I posted Katie's stats and said, we're lost. And what should we do? And she said, you need to apply for these full ride, full tuition scholarships at these other schools, you know, and it's a range of them, right? But in order to get them, it is more competitive to get those than it is to get into the Ivies. To give you an example, they had 3,000 applicants for 15 spots for one of these full rides, right? So that's, you're looking at 1% to 2% get these full rides at each school. So at that point, you cast a wide net, right? Because when you only have a 1% to 2% chance of being the person that's awarded that, you got to like kind of cast a wide net. So that's what started us on our journey with my oldest child, was trying to figure out with these high stats, with the resume, with all the things, where could she go and maximize the amount of merit money that she could get to attend college.
So Ron, does that jibe with the what you know about higher ed? Getting a full ride scholarship is probably harder than getting into one of the fancy Ivy League schools?
It absolutely jibes with what I've learned in my reporting, and very few people know it. You know, the schools that offer the full rides aren't necessarily broadcasting the selectivity of those particular scholarships, although they probably should, right? Because for people who are worried about prestige, right, who are worried about how other people will view your choice, who are worried about some employer someday, there's a very quick fix for this, right? The first line of your resume under academic achievements, you can say, turned down Duke, Cornell, Dartmouth, and, you know, Carleton College. And then you've staked your claim at, you know, having run the selectivity gauntlet and won, but made a more prudent financial choice, right? So an employer sees that and they're like, whoa, I kind of want to talk to this person.
Oh, that's fascinating. So Laura, it really was an involved process, but shorter version, how did you go about trying to figure out the schools that might offer the merit aid scholarships? Some of it was through social media and Facebook, right?
Absolutely. So again, there is a Facebook page called Paying for College, and I was fortunate to have another parent who was willing to pay it forward for me, which is what I try and do with the parents that are on there now. And she actually sent me an Excel spreadsheet. That was the place we started. And so she had put this Excel spreadsheet together for her child that had a list of about 15, 20 universities that have full ride scholarships. So we started with those and we started looking at those. And then we started researching what are the other schools that have full ride scholarships. And to be honest with you, that information is not nearly as easy to come by as you would think. Sometimes it's on a completely separate page. Sometimes it's under their honors college and then on a separate page under their honors college. It is frequently not front and center on their on their website, you know?
Laura, what's a key word? Like full tuition grant or something like that?
Yep. So you would use full tuition scholarship. You would look for university fellows. Typically, these full ride scholarships, not all the time, but frequently, they come with a lot of perks if you can get them. Because these kids, they become the face of the university for that class, if you want to think about it that way, right? These are the kids who turned down the Ivies to come to University of Alabama's Fellows Program. So University of Alabama's Fellows Program, it's a cohort of roughly 20 people, and it provides that cohort with amazing advising and special study abroads that they get to go do and all sorts of perks that it comes with, right? So, but you have to know to look for University of Fellows Experience. Right. It's called UFE. Clemson's is the National Scholars Program, NSP. You have to know to look for those things. So we would search under full tuition scholarships, but we would also search for fellows programs, scholars programs. We would always go to the honors page because these sorts of things are almost always linked to the honors page, even if they have their own page for the program, if that makes sense.
So how many colleges did your daughter apply to in the end?
Over 30. It was more than 30, and she wrote 90 essays, more than 90, actually.
So, I mean, Laura, who's managing all this, right? I mean, she's managing this as best she can, but she's trying to be a junior and a senior also.
This was all senior year, right? Because most of this doesn't happen till senior year. So, yeah, she is trying to keep up with her classes, keep her grades up in an extremely rigorous program. And, you know, she was a scholar athlete, so she's still playing soccer and she's still captain of the swim team and, you know, doing all of that stuff. So the managing of it really fell to me. My daughter did all the work, in other words, writing all of the essays and all of those things. Like, of course, we didn't do any of that stuff for her. But the managing of it fell to me. The managing of it being finding out which schools offered these sorts of programs, then keeping track of the deadlines and reminding her or setting up, you know, again, we had a pretty involved Excel spreadsheet going to keep track of all this stuff of, okay, so this essay is due on this day. I will also say that there were times we kept her home from school to work on these essays, that we prioritized chasing this merit money over her day at school, because she could make up the day at school, but if she missed the deadline, she could not make that up.
And so what was this? What did you kick in maybe a couple hours a week on helping to manage this?
No, this really became kind of like my full-time job. I would get up in the morning and I would search for universities that have these sorts of programs and then what the stats were, because again, that information is not readily available. So I would search for what were the stats for the, you know, who typically got awarded for these. Another place you can go is College Confidential. And you go out there and say, I'm looking at the National Scholars Program for Clemson. Can anybody who had a kid that went through that program give me some feedback on it? And you typically get parents or students who would write back to you and say, my kid interviewed for this and here's what their stats were, or this is what this looked like. So a lot of it is crowdsourcing from other people who have been through this process before you. So hours, lots of hours.
Hours. And, you know, another full-time job, you say. And then you have to go visit a bunch of these places.
Yeah. So we took a little bit different tact on that. We did visit several universities the summer before she was a senior. After that, we waited to see what the financial offers were. As I said, my daughter applied to about 30 schools. We had a budget that we told her that her father and I would kick in $20,000. She, of course, is eligible for the $5,000 loan. So once we had financial offers in from the schools, we had about 9 schools that fit within our budget. At that point, we went back to revisit those schools.
So a lot of travel, which has its own expense. Ron Lieber, once you have these offers, there's some questions to ask based on those, like, do they last more than a year? What happens if you don't quite complete the BA in 4 years, right?
Exactly. You want to know exactly what the rules are where this incredibly generous award could be taken away from you. So, you know, maybe if you drop out of the honors program for whatever reason, or your grade point average falls below a certain point, will they allow you to take a year off sometime during that time if you want to? Are you kept from studying abroad? Are you forced to study abroad? And then, you know, there may be an opportunity to ask for a little more. Right? You know, if it's not a full ride and you've got another institution that's less attractive to you that is offering more money and it's reasonably competitive with the institution that you're interested in, you can go back and innocently inquire and just say, look, you know, we have a more generous offer from this school over here. You are our first choice. And we would just like to know, is there something else that you would like to know, or is there something else that we could do to convince you to make these offers the same so that our net price is the same? And nobody's going to get angry at you for asking for a little bit more money. There's nothing wrong with that. The worst that can happen is that they will say no. They are not going to yank away your offer of admission.
So one of the questions you really need to ask when you get these offers are, how many students keep them? Right? Because it doesn't do any good to attend a school that you go on a full ride scholarship and, 40% of the kids end up losing their scholarship. that's not good, right? So one of the first questions you want to ask after you get the offers from the admissions office is, how many kids keep this scholarship? How many kids start out in this program with this scholarship and graduate with it, you know, manage to keep it all 4 years? The other thing is you want to look at the GPA, right? We turned down a couple of offers because they had a 3.5 GPA requirement. Well, maintaining a 3.5 GPA requirement is a pretty high burden to meet for 4 years, right? And if you drop below it, then you lost your scholarship. So you need to be aware of, really evaluate those things once the offers come in of, how many kids keep the scholarships? What are the requirements to keep the scholarships? And also what their grading scale is, because we didn't ask that question and it's turned out okay for my daughter, but I just assumed that the grading scale was, you know, a straight ABCD scale. And that's how our state universities work here. The school my daughter's at is not. It's on a A minus, you know, B plus, plus or minus scale, right? That makes it a little bit harder to keep your GPA because if you get an A in a class, you only get a 4.0, right? You don't get a bump for getting an A plus. But if you get an A minus, your GPA is actually less than a 4.0. It's actually a 3.7. Right? So those are all really important questions to ask because getting the money is great, but not if you can't hold on to it.
And this worked in the case of your daughter, this giant process?
It did. We, again, gave her a budget and said, this is the budget. She ended up with 9 schools she could choose from of the roughly 30 that she applied to. Some of those schools were full rides, and she actually ended up not taking those. That was a personal choice for our family because fit does matter at universities, right? It's not that we don't think that fit matters. But for us, and in terms of the larger audience that you're talking about, I really think that the narrative needs to change from your dream school. Your dream school is the school that your kid can afford and not be saddled with a lot of debt. After that, any school can be your dream school. So it did work for her. She is actually at her dream school. It was the school that from the beginning she said, this is my dream school. That worked out for her. But had that not been one of the schools that came through, I honestly believe she could have been happy at any of the 9 schools that were financially affordable to us.
Mm. But she got help at the school she chose. It's just she didn't get full tuition.
She got a full tuition. She did not get a full ride.
I mean, part of Laura's story here is that you're dealing with an actual human being, your kid, and you have to take into account their preferences as best you can. And that's also part of this process.
I think you should take their preferences into account as best as you can. But it is also your job as the grown-up to explain ahead of time just how much decision-making authority you are willing to cede, right? And if your line to the child is, we have $20,000 to spend and we're willing to borrow $10,000 more, and no more other than that, then you have to be prepared for them to believe that they can do anything they want with that budget if they manage to sort of win this extreme sport of merit aid acquisition. And if they do, well, they've probably done their job and you ought to give them a fair amount of authority to make that decision with those within those guardrails.
Yeah, so let me just tell you that Katie's other dream school was Duke. And of course, she didn't get enough merit money from Duke. And we had to have some pretty serious discussions. And she was quite angry with me initially. I'm like, sorry, like you can't go. And she stormed and she said, I'll take the loans out myself. And I said, but you can't. The most you can take out is $30,000 over the course of your 4 years there. And that will not pay for Duke. And your father and I will not take out Parent Plus loans. And it was a tense time in our house when I had to say, that's not an option for you. I'm sorry, but you won't be going there because it's too expensive.
I mean, among many other reasons, you have three other children who presumably will need to be educated.
Well, yes. And when I laid out for her that, again, even with the budget we've given her, her father and I will be spending roughly $500,000 to educate our four children, that did seem to make an impact on her. I said, you know, I feel entirely comfortable that we're good parents spending $500,000 on you guys.
Right. And David, there's a takeaway here too, which is this, right? One reason to start this process earlier than, say, junior year in high school is so that you as a parent, or a parent if there are two, or certainly an ex if you have one of those, so that everybody is on the same page about your ability to pay and your willingness to pay, and whether there is a gulf between those two things. And then imagine a universe of really expensive colleges that you just don't think that you could afford under any circumstances. It is only fair for a child who is working hard, oblivious to the financial realities, to become unoblivious to them so that they know what to expect and what not to demand, unreasonably so, from their parents when the time comes.
Absolutely. We have had lots of discussions with all four of our children about this is the budget and you can reach for your dream school. Katie reached for her dream school and it worked out for her. It was a lot of work for her. She, in my opinion, earned every single one of the dollars that her school is giving her. You know, she wrote 90 essays, she all of those things, right? She earned that money. That being said, we are very transparent with our children about this is what we can do for you for college. And too many parents, again, back to the idea that the dream school is the school that you can afford and that your child does not graduate saddled with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. There is no undergraduate degree that is worth $100,000 in debt as somebody's trying to start out. The dream school is the one you can afford. And too many parents do not want to have that conversation. Their kids work hard through high school and they feel that their student has worked so hard through high school. They were, you know, on a roll. They pulled all-nighters. They did all the things they were supposed to do. So they are entitled to go to their dream school. Well, unfortunately, really, the reality is they're not. And the other thing is that we learned through this process and that I try and talk to people about, there's a world of difference between looking at this process in terms of applying for admission and looking at this process in terms of applying for affordability. Everybody, you know, talks about the target schools. You know, you should have three types of schools, you know, a reach school, a target school, a safety school. And they're usually talking about that from an admissions process. That narrative needs to change also to, they should have financial safety schools on their list that you make sure they apply to. Too many people don't do that. We see if Ron's following, and I'm sure he is, every single year at this time on the paying for college page, and it breaks my heart, we see parents who let their kids just apply to schools they could not afford. And every year there are parents on that page who they come begging for help. My kid got accepted to 10 schools and we can't afford any of them without taking out massive Parent PLUS loans. What are my options? Too late. You don't have any options. Your options are reapply next year. And that's terrible.
This is an incredibly complicated, somewhat opaque process. And it is not the fault of the parents who run this gauntlet and get to the end and don't realize what has happened to them. But part of what I'm trying to do and part of what people like Laura are trying to do in educating the community is to sort of raise an army of consumers who are better shoppers and ask better questions about affordability and hidden discounts well ahead of time so that nobody is surprised at the end and that you don't end up with a tearful teenager on your hands in April who doesn't actually understand how the financial machinations have worked and what the family can truly afford. Because at that point, it is sometimes easier to make the teenager feel better, and sometimes the only way to do that is to borrow way more money than you should.
So just one thing I'd like to add to this conversation. One of the things that we, in my opinion, really need to do in terms of educating parents, and that's really who needs to be educated about this, who then need to sort of pass that along to their children, right? But at the end of the day, it's the parents who sign on for these Parent Plus loans because they want to let their kids have this, right? It matters starting in ninth grade. So with this pandemic, I have a child that's a senior right now, right? And this was, of course, totally unexpected, right? But our school shut down in March. Well, we had been getting my daughter sort of ready for this process starting in freshman year, right? And the courses she took and the things that she did, taking SATs, all of that sort of stuff. Not ridiculous, you know? It's not like she had to go sit on every Saturday and do SAT prep. We didn't do any of that stuff. But we were aware of the fact that it matters. It makes a difference. She was in a much better position for this application process in this pandemic because she'd been preparing for it from the time she was a freshman. Merit money is tied to early action deadlines, and those deadlines are October 1st, October 15th, November 1st, November 15th, and then just a couple December 1st. That's where the merit money is. If you're not ready to put your applications in by those deadlines, you're going to lose out on that merit money.
Laura Mordenti-Perrault is a very involved parent in Maryland. You can learn more about her in Ron Lieber's new book. That book is called The Price You Pay for College. He's also the New York Times money columnist. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, David.